Given what we see transpiring in the big cities of our nation, it makes a lot of sense to move out, start something new. And so we ask, how can we turn a neighborhood into an agrihood?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1245th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show, or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Monaco who are tuned into the Food Chain podcast at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, things are not looking so good right now in the big cities of America. And we don't really need to paint a picture because it's being painted every night on the evening news. Lunch on the sidewalks of San Francisco, anyone? So what to do? Well, one thing many are doing is moving out of the big city and setting up work at homes out in the suburbia and even exurbia. But what do we do with our big city get up and go once we move out there? Croquet and bingo? Why not take that big city drive, that impulse that makes us want to stay up all night and plot schemes of business brilliance, and set up an agrihood? Yes, let's use our intelligence to build some of the food chains, what's eating what, right there into the neighborhood. Which you'd have to admit, it would make life a lot more interesting than croquet and bingo. And so we ask, how can we turn a neighborhood into an agrihood? And here to help us plan away, we have Anna DeSimone, who is the author of Welcome to the Agrihood, Housing, Shopping, and Gardening for a Farm-to-Table Lifestyle. Anna, welcome to the Food Chain.
Oh, Michael, thank you for inviting me. I'm delighted to meet you and be on your show. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, first, before we go anywhere, what on earth is an agrihood?
Okay. An agrihood is a residential community that is centered around a working farm. And so, but most agrihoods are built on conservation land or what was formerly the heritage farmland. And, you know, the residents who live there get to shop and get organic food that is grown at the professionally managed farm. And or they also have community gardens where the residents have a chance to do their own private gardening with the help of the agriculturalists that are on staff working at the professional farm.
So this is really a professional farm village, as it were.
Well, yeah, we could say it was a professional farm village for those agrihoods that are running CSA programs, which is community-supported agriculture, or maybe providing food to local restaurants and shops. But just to give you the, you know, the whole tip of the iceberg picture, an agrihood is a master plan community. And it's where real estate developers and community planners, environmentalists, and conservationists get together and say, let's build a community with a purpose. And the purpose really is to get people to connect with nature. And so there, around the country, there are about 90 agrihoods, and many of them were built on heritage farmland. So the developer would approach the farmer and say, hey, we want to buy your 300 acres of farmland, but we need your expertise. We want to keep you and your staff of farm workers around, and we want you to be part of our team. So they're part of the original, you know, committee for planning the infrastructure of how the farm is going to be organized in agricultural activities. And then it might be a 2 or 3 year process where the developers are meeting with the environmentalists and the land planners, because one of the things about agrihoods is people aren't usually buying homes on large lots. The typical agrihood across the country in all regions has anywhere up to 60 or 70% of open space. Gives people a chance to have walking trails, biking trails, to connect with nature. And of course, many master plan communities have clubhouses, you know, and some of them have, many of them have charter schools. But when you said bingo and croquet, it reminds me of something very important that I'd like to mention about the wonderful thing about AgriHoods. I mean, obviously you have fresh, local, organic food right at your doorstep. But the developers of AgriHoods around the country, and I have to say that California does it wonderfully, does it best. AgriHoods seem to have captured the demographics, and they're building communities so that they're not one big homogeneous tract of little houses in a row with people in the same age group. AgriHood communities are generally very diverse, and there's a lot of multi-generational, you know, families. So what keeps people young and vital, and I'm a baby boomer myself, is when you're sitting on your porch and you're watching kids ride their bikes through the community. This is what keeps people young. In addition to the healthy food, it's a vital lifestyle. And so, yes, you're not playing bingo and croquet because you're not in a community with nothing else to do but play bingo and croquet. So the thing about AgriHoods is you get to connect with the farmer. You go to the farm store every day, and you're chatting with the farm team, and you're waving hi to the people that are actually planting the food that you're going to put on your table. So it's a very rewarding lifestyle for both your health and psychologically for people from age 3, the toddlers, all the way to, you know, the people in their 80s. So there are 8 AgriHoods in California, and there is a new one coming because I've, you know, gotten pretty chummy with the developers of this AgriHood because they have a very successful, beautiful equestrian themed AgriHood in Illinois. But the new one coming is going to be built on an avocado ranch, but it is going to be an age-in-place AgriHood that caters to senior living.
Age-in-place, you said?
Yeah,
for
seniors.
What does that mean?
Well, what it means is like an over 55 community, but aging-in-place also means that on the general facilities, I mean, there's like 600 acres here from this avocado ranch in El Cajon, okay. Well, there's going to be a health and an integrated health and wellness seniors community, which would also include a memory care facility and an assisted living facility.
So okay. That means you could age in place there.
Yeah,
and you don't have to have to go someplace else.
Right.
You can stay right there.
But, yeah, so there are a couple of communities in California that are strictly over 55. One of them is in Carmel. But the very largest AgriHood in America is Rancho Mission Viejo, which is in Rancho Mission Viejo, and it has 4 distinct villages. And it's a 23,000-acre ranch nestled between the Cleveland National Forest and San Juan Capistrano. And these villages all have their own unique housing characteristics and demographics. There's a lot of resort-style amenities. There's hundreds of clubs. There's community farms. And there's also, on this 23,000-acre, is a rental community and a senior community. And then with the housing characteristics, you also get quite a range in, price range. But the rest of the AgriHoods that are in California have tremendous open space. There's one in Palm Springs that was built on a former golf course, and what the developers did there is they planted 7,000 olive trees. And what they've done is the architectural aesthetic of these AgriHoods reflect the community that is at the heart of the landmark village in California. Mm-hmm. So in Palm Springs, you would have mid-century inspired, whereas other parts of agrihood developments, you're going to see, you know, the rocking chair porches and the more, you know, vintage style, you know, Victorian homes, or you'll see a lot of the farmhouse style homes.
So there are 90 of these across the country then?
Yes, yes.
And one of the 26 more being planned?
Oh, no. There's there are probably 100 in the works, which means the plans are on paper.
Mm-hmm.
But the ones that I covered in my book are completely built, or they're currently under construction, and they're, you know, in the process of selling agrihoods this year. But California probably has the highest number of agrihood communities in the country. And Rancho Mission Viejo has been in existence for over 20 years. Although I would say the majority of agrihoods, 70-80% of agrihoods in America are less than 10 years old.
So relatively
think,
new.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're relatively new, and it's a relatively new concept. And because of that, these homes were sustainably built.
Mm-hmm.
They're with energy. They have Energy Star ratings, energy efficient features. The builders provide solar heating. Because remember, the agrihood concept is still, it's an environmentally friendly kind of an environment. So in addition to wanting to have locally grown organic food, people also want to have, you know, eco-conscious homes. And I organize my book around the amenities, because some agrihoods have, you know, swimming and boating and fishing, and others have horseback riding. You know,
so they kind of go along with a basic theme then, don't they? If you're an equestrian kind of person, your chances are you could find an equestrian kind of place. You know, Anna, this reminds me a little bit of the university I went to, University of California, Santa Cruz, that was designed around a campus in which there were, like, I don't know, 15 colleges. And each college was kind of like its own little agrihood, if you will. Didn't quite have any agriculture on it, on the campus per se, but each had their own distinctive kind of feel and personality and whatnot. And in that regards, I remember a class project I was assigned as a university student, and that was to design a utopia. And that's kind of what agrihoods are, aren't they? Their own little utopias.
Well, in Monterey, California, there is a utopian, high, exceptional homes agrihood.
Okay.
And everyone who buys there is going to have, you know, 5 or 10 acres of land.
Wow.
You know, and this is a much higher price range, but it's a zero energy environment. No fossil fuels are allowed. And the architecture is very much of a utopian.
Everything
model.
You want. We're going to have to take a quick break, Anna, but when we come back, I want to ask you how you came to be an agrihooder as a big city girl. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What? Today, we're talking about agrihoods with Anna DeSimone, who is the author of Welcome to the Agrihood. And, of course, we're there with you. We are at metrofarm.com. If you'd like to comment, go right there and do it. We will be right back.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Hitting What, with Anna DeSimone, who is the author of Welcome to the Agrihood. What on earth is that, an agrihood? Well, it's a planned community. But Anna is a national expert, well-known expert, on housing finance. And she's a big city girl. She's living in New York City. So we just have to ask Anna, how did you come to be an agrihooder?
Well, I'm not really living in an agrihood, but I am living right now in an over 55 community. However, my house is I decided to consolidate. I'm giving up the city apartment and the house in the suburbs to consolidate into a suburban home with some walkability. Because like many people buying into agri-hoods, you, as you age, you want to think about what do you want to do when you get up today, when you wake up. I happen to be a bicycle rider, and I'm in my 70s, but I love riding 10 or 15 miles a day. But I also like walking to the stores and walking to shops. I don't like being a two-home owner. So my whole life is studying housing demographics, and I decided to write the Agri-Hood book because I really believe that people will feel younger and they will be healthier if they have access not only to the local food as in an agri-hood, but in hobbies and the things that they enjoy doing. And my next book is called Live in a Home That Pays You Back. And it is about energy-efficient homes, healthy homes, houseboats, tiny homes. And I came up with the concept of that book while I was writing the agri-hood book because I really believed that having a home on with a working farm is payback. And as I explored that further, I realized that, hey, homes are expensive. You know, 30 years ago, people were buying homes for $10,000, $15,000. Now the average house is $350,000. So I think that Americans need to get as much out of their home purchase as possible. They need to think of the housing characteristics they want, the features, the garage, the yard for their pets, whatever, you know, rooms for their kids, home offices. But they also have to think of their environment. People want walkability. They want to ride their bikes. They want to be able to take public transportation. And so when you think about all of the things that are meaningful to you and your household members, you put that all together and say, why would I want to spend $1 million on a house with a dream kitchen? I'm not getting anything back for that, which is probably why I'm selling my house in Connecticut.
There you go.
I have a chef's kitchen, but I would rather be outside playing, you know, and riding around and stopping at a cafe to have a cup of coffee. Mm-hmm. So my inspiration to write the Agri-Hood book has a lot to do with the amenities and the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
also, it's good for kids. Agri-hoods are a wonderful place for children. They're having a blast. I mean, I've talked to all the developers of these agri-hoods across the nation.
Oh, and what could be more fun for a kid than being on a farm? Can't think of anything that would be more fun for a kid than a farm, especially one with animals. Which is kind of where I was raised. But I'd like to take you back, if I might, Anna DeSimone, yeah, to New York City. Because it seems to me like we here in the United States and probably elsewhere around the world are being changed by this COVID pandemic. And in a very big way, in the cities especially. And I just saw where a high-tech company called Pinterest.
Oh, yeah.
Just this week, I think it was, paid pretty close to $100 billion to get out of a lease in a San Francisco high-rise. They paid $100 billion to get out of a lease. That, to me, is indicative of really big changes happening in the city.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I haven't been in New York for 6 months. I mean, I was there today, well, the past 2 days, because I am wrapping up and get my lease. I'm paying, it ends in December, but I'm starting to make plans now. I'm honoring my lease by paying rent, but I will tell you that New York is a ghost town. There's no, but 25,000 apartments are available for rent. And
in New York City, and
yes, and
this just in a matter of a half a year.
That's right. And I haven't, I by making the decision to sell my house now, which my grandchildren, as it turns out, both live in Canada. They are dual citizens, and as much as I would love to be visiting them now, I can't. I'm not having the company. I don't need a big house, the guest rooms, because my daughter and I, you know, meet them upstate New York or go to Canada. Mm-hmm. And so when I suddenly realized that my house went up in value $200,000 in 6 months because all of the New Yorkers are coming into Connecticut, these little bubbles are happening around the country. And I just built this house 3 years ago, and it's beautiful. But like I said, if I'm not getting anything back and I have a chance to make some money, I've decided to consolidate and be closer up in an area by the Hudson River where I can take a train to Canada and also take a short half-hour, one-hour train ride to New York for, you know, when my cultural activities are back up again. Yeah. I will be going to the city more often.
But there's no sense in going there now because there's nothing. I read a interesting piece about Starbucks and how Starbucks, almost all of the Starbucks have reopened since the COVID shutdown, except for those in New York City.
And it's a ghost town there. It really is. Everyone, you have to wear a mask everywhere you go, even when I bring my trash from my building to down the hall, I have to wear a mask because my building has very strict rules. And it's sad, but you still feel the energy. You see people sitting, like you mentioned, on the San Francisco tables, dining outside. At least you see people having fun, and they get to take off their masks while they eat, and they're enjoying eating. But again, I know that that you have people of all different age levels that are listening to your show, and real estate is a big investment. And I think that you have to think about real estate investment in your life stages. You know, when you're young and you're buying your first home, or maybe a move-up size house when your children are older. But then there's the empty nester stage. And because of my own experience and my friends, I'm finding that that is really emotionally very challenging decision about where you want to live, because you think about being able to have your family visit with you. And I will say, I talk to the agri-hoods around the country, and I've been invited to visit agri-hoods in Ohio, Oregon, North Carolina, because I've really formed a nice friendship with these people. And I've gotten a very good feel about the lifestyle. Having the fresh food is very important, and it's one of the reasons that it draws people, you know, from their homes in the suburb and relocating to an agri-hood. But I think it's a vital community. It is the energy that goes around with all of the trails, the dog parks, the places for kids. You just see people that are like-minded. They're all enjoying
it. It would also seem to be a much more secure environment than living in the big city as well, especially these days, because who knows what's around the corner. Let me ask you this. As a person who's worked in finance all her life in housing finance and is so tuned into that world, do you think that the changes we are seeing made into big city living are a permanent change, or do you think people are actually going to go back to the big city and live there?
I think that the vacation home market, this what we call staycation market, is going to get very hot. You're going to see people buying 900-square-foot condos in the big cities so that they can get their work done and go to their business meetings. And then they're going to spend two-thirds of their time in the cottage by the lake, or you know, a mountain area or by a canyon. I mean, where you are, the canyons and mountains. And whether or not they have children in school, there's also the situation of, are my kids going to be in school virtually? Am I going to homeschool my kids? And so I think that the real estate selection now, it's not going to be about living in a prestigious community anymore. You know, where you waltz into your high school reunion and you just announce you just bought a house in a fancy town. People don't care about that anymore. People are buying homes to be practical. The current generation, the millennial generation, has the best credit scores. They have the most secure savings account, and they are the most educated about home financing. So 20 years ago, people were going into real estate offices and buying homes, you know, when we had a predatory lending problem in America, and they were not as educated, and they were buying homes that they couldn't afford. They were buying toxic mortgages. And we had,
but you can't really blame them, because the prices of houses were going up astronomically every month. So all you had to do was get in, and then you'd be a zillionaire by virtue of the incredible escalation in housing prices. And it worked great until it didn't work anymore at all.
Well, so what happens is real estate bubbles are created by Google and Silicon Valley, and you know, Microsoft builds this huge plant in Silicon Valley, and all of a sudden, within a 60-mile radius, all the house values go up. Sometimes house values go up, or they're sustained at high levels because the schools have these very high ratings. That's kind of a sore point with me, because I get tired of reading real estate ads that say, great schools. Now, I think that people have to realize that, you know, not every family has the same school needs as other people, and that sometimes real estate values are artificially inflated because of these, you know, bragging rights of,
sure,
you know, school ratings. And so now I think people are going for safety, healthy. They want to be able to have their kids play safely outside. And, you know,
that really yells out Agrihood.
Well, the Agrihood in Ohio, the slogan there is, our kids, we have free-range chickens and free-range kids. Because the kids own the road, and the kids get together and they go into the woods with, they forage, you know, lumber around. They find pieces of scraps of lumber, and they go into the woods and they build their own forts. You know, they kind of do the things that we did back in the 1950s. We were always playing outside and making our own toys and things like that. So the lifestyle, and then there's a the first Agrihood in America that was built in the early 1980s is in Illinois. And their charter school has won 25 awards, including two of the best charter schools in the United States, like 4 years in a row. Then we have the Agrihoods in the Carolinas that are winning the National Association of Home Builders Awards for the most environmentally efficient building in America. I mean, they're racking up all of the best amenities in America. They're racking up the best green living. And so a lot of the new Agrihoods that are in the planning stages now are including charter schools K-12. And I like the fact that Agrihoods have been conveniently located to airports and metropolitan areas. And they are also, if they don't have charter schools, they are making sure that there's transportation to the local school district.
Mm-hmm.
And they also are neighborhoods with a conscience. They take their leftover food and they give it to local food hubs. And you know, you're the food chain specialist, so you understand that, you know, food hubs are mission-based organizations. And so when I was exploring AgriHorts, what I realized is they join hands with the community. They will say, hey, we will cook, we will grow vegetables for your local restaurants. We will provide vegetables for your stores or your little markets, because they have more of a community spirit. And then, like the food hub, they will work with shelters and churches to avoid food waste. So I think when you have a mission-based philosophy like that, and you have wonderful amenities, and you have a great farmer, like the person who's the go-to farmer, and we have a lot of women-run...
So it's very interesting. The farmer really becomes the focal point of the neighborhood. And we're going to pick that up when we come back. Folks, okay. This is a lot of fun to design your own utopia, an AgriHood. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson. And today we have Anna DeSimone, author of Welcome to the AgriHood. And you, right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, it all seems just too good to be true. Move out of the big city where things are just not working quite right. And, why not? Nobody seems to be sitting in meetings anymore. We all seem to be sitting in a Zoom telescreen. And there we are. And by golly, we can be just about anywhere and do that. We don't have to be sitting in a meeting room with other people wearing masks. We can take our masks off and sit in front of our camera and smile. It almost seems like, I don't know, why should people move back to the city? I know you dodged answering that tough question that I gave you, Anna. So I'm gonna go back to that.
Again.
Are people really going to go back to that city?
Oh, yeah, I did dodge that. Yeah, well, I think that people are looking at whether or not they need a home office. So they're looking for different flexible floor plans. But as far as going back to the city, I hate to say it, but depends. Like, I'm a Bostonian. I'm a native New York Bostonian. That's where my business was for 35 years. My daughter's still there. So the city of Boston has its own culture, its own history. If you grew up there like I did, you're called a townie. And so there is something very important about having a quality of life where living in the town you grow up is just where you're most happy. It's not about, being able to visit grandparents or friends and relatives. The joy you have when you take a child in fourth grade and you go to parent teacher's night, and who do you see but the same teacher you had 20 years before when you were a kid? And he says, oh, my God, I have your son in my class. These are the things that make living in your hometown very special to people, because you're connecting. And sometimes you might be living in a two- or three-family house. It could be a small house with a small yard. And no, you're not out in the beautiful suburbs, but you have security. It's a wonderful, secure thing to know. You're looking on a map. My grandma lives here. My dad works here. My school is here. When you're 4 and 5 years old and you begin to sense where the secure things are in your life. And so if you are living in a city, whether it's Phoenix, Detroit, San Francisco, Boston, or even New York, and like Brooklyn or Queens, if that's your town, then something is going to draw you back to that town because of your own safety and security. But if you move to New York City or San Francisco because you love the nightlife, you like the bars, you like the restaurants, you go to the gym every day, and then all of a sudden now you're saying, well, I don't want to be sharing an elevator every time I go in and out of my apartment. I don't want to be in a crowded bar anymore. I don't want to work out in a gym. I I want to be able to ride a bike in my own backyard. And so, yes, the pandemic is going to change the urban, you know, the flight from the cities, but not everyone, because I think that there are people that were just born to stay there. And of course, there are people that will never leave New York.
Yeah. I think mostly young kids or young people who, you know, kind of just starting a career, what a fun place for them to be. And I remember I worked for NBC Magazine with David Brinkley for a number of years, and we would go back to 30 Rock and to put on our shows. And what a wonderful, wonderful feeling that was to be in that incredibly bubbly milieu of people and excitement. And but I don't know, at this age, I'm not sure I would want that. You know, earlier today, I saw a television piece about a family that moved from New York to the suburbs of Miami. And, you know, an inner city family. And all of a sudden, they were plunked down in this perfect suburban neighborhood where there was not a weed out of place for as far as you could see. And I got to thinking, well, it's going to be an interesting adjustment for a family who's used to the grittiness of big city living to be in such, you know, perfection. I wonder if they'll get bored playing croquet.
That's right. Well, I think it depends on how old they are. Because the real estate agent that I interviewed yesterday in Asheville, North Carolina, she happens to live in Niagara, which is how we connected. And she sells homes in the greater Asheville area, you know, not just in Niagara, but all homes. And she has a lot of people that are telling her that they want to be they want to live in a community that's diverse. They want to see young people. They want to see old people. But she told me yesterday that half her customers are coming up from Florida. And
oh, really? That's interesting.
She said it's not because of the COVID. They're just bored.
Exactly. That's exactly what I looked at that beautiful suburban home that these folks are moving into, and I went, oh, my God, I'm frightened of it.
Well, it's kind of like what I have here in Connecticut. It's demographically flat. It's just, to me, after growing up in Boston and being used to living in a college town my whole life, and, of course, that's where my business was, and every once in a while I still go visit my old employees. And so, but I wanted to cut my commute in half because I was going to New York almost every week after a while. So I thought, okay, I went on Google Earth, picked out the halfway point in Connecticut, didn't know anybody here, built this absolutely gorgeous house along the shore. But to me, it's, well, in a word, it's just too boring for me. And I want the walkability. And so New York is too much walkability.
Right.
You have to find,
and you're on cement all the time too, right?
Yeah.
You know, let's talk.
Manicured, you know, the manicured lawns and the rules of the homeowners association. It's like being filmed in Stepford Wives movie. It's just not me.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to give it all up.
And, Well, you're very good at making the moves, girl. Let me ask you this. Yeah. How do they bring agriculture into an agri-hood? What are some of the mechanisms by which that is affected?
Well, if the agri-hood is on a former farm, what the developers do is they keep the iconic buildings like, you know, the barns, the silos, and in addition to the staff. So, you know, an agri-hood community likes to reflect the characteristics of the heritage, mm-hmm. of the landmark community. But when they designed the agri-hood, All right, I would say 70, approximately 70 to 80%, somewhere in there, because there have been some changes even since I wrote this book, have a working farm. But the newer agri-hoods that are being developed now, and some of the existing agri-hoods that have converted to what's called a community farm. So you have staff agriculturalists and you have farmers that are trained, but they're not growing food to sell in a store. They are helping the people who live in the agri-hood learn how to grow their own food. Mm-hmm. So what it is an agricultural assist. There's a huge agri-hood in Florida that's very successful in the Orlando area, and they call it a living classroom. They have a huge working farm, but what they do on that farm is on every single day, the people that live in that agri-hood are on the farm working alongside the professional agriculturalists.
You know, I had
a training.
There you go. I had a hand in setting up community gardens. And it was a beautiful garden. And gosh, there might have been pretty close to 70 little miniature gardens within that garden. But what happened is that it's an instant community of interest. And you know, we didn't have any professional there to show people how to do things, but everybody showed everybody else how to do things. And, you know, they exchanged tips and whatnot. And the garden became a beautiful place. It just sprang to life like that. And that's what I was wondering. When you take a farm and build a community onto that farm, you're going to take out much of the existing, you know, soil resources. So I would assume that to keep the agriculture in an agri-hood, you'd almost have to do something like a community garden.
They all have, almost every agri-hood has a community garden because people have expressed interest in growing their own food, but they like being in the vicinity of the staff.
Another thing,
to talk to every day. People are lonely. They want to be able to go down to the little farm store, no matter whether it's huge or small, and have a cup of coffee, pick up their fresh farm-raised eggs and vegetables, and just say hi to someone.
Loaf of bread and whatnot, sure.
Many farm stores are also selling the food products of other purveyors, would be an artisan, breads and jams, or could be a local rancher. You know, depending on the part of the country, there might be beef. It could be a local organic poultry farmer. And you could have a local fishery that is growing, with catching fish through sustainable methods, because, you know the farm organics are growing using sustainable methods, and they like to do business with other farmers in the area. You know, there's a lot of collaboration. So you'll see local poultry farmers and ranchers collaborating with agri-hoods so that the people who live in the agri-hood get to meet and greet on farmers market days and get to know the local ranchers and poultry farmers there. You don't usually see in an agri-hood the sale and production of meat products or poultry products. You'll see a lot of farm-raised eggs. You know, the chickens are layers, and you'll see farms, agri-hoods with pigs, but typically they are not doing any slaughtering on an agri-hood.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of laws against things like slaughtering your own animals these days, and it's a very difficult thing to do. But I was wondering about chickens. I mean, my goodness, what a wonderful thing to do to raise chickens and ducks and things of that sort. Could be raised pretty easily on an agri-hood without too much trouble, as long as you have the space and somebody to actually supervise the care of those critters. It might work. And it would be a wonderful thing for children, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's this agri-hood in Ohio, they have a resident donkey named Jack. And every day, you know, the kids go off to school, and the mother and the father takes the toddler, and they meander down to the farm store just because the toddler has to say hi to Jack the donkey every single day. And then they allow the children to go in and pick the eggs from, the, you know, in the store. There's a lot of interaction. You know, it's, and again, it's all of these things that make people feel safe, and it's just very fulfilling.
You know,
and
it's,
yet there are people that are not even shopping at the store. They just want to live on the neighborhood. So it's, you're always going to have a mix of the socially active and the socially passive.
It seems to me, Anna DeSimone, that what is being developed here is a complete reaction to the big city, and it's heading in a completely opposite direction. It seems like what we are doing is rebuilding the early American village.
Well,
with Wi-Fi, right?
Yeah.
With some village,
cable and Wi-Fi is more important than phones out there. Well, let's talk about the urban sprawl and suburbia. So back in the 60s and 70s, people were moving out to the suburbs, because they were driving to work.
Right.
And so they were leaving the cities. But a lot of things happen in the suburbs.
And nobody wants to drive anymore anyway. We're just about out of time, Anna DeSimone.
Yeah.
But do you have a website we can go look at?
Oh, sure. My website is annadesimone.net.
annadesimone.net.
Yeah, and I have my housing finance book is in both English and Spanish. My Spanish book is called Hipoteca 2020, and the housing finance book is all about everything you want to know about home buying and mortgage.
And we're just ran out of time, Anna DeSimone. But thank you so much for joining me. What a joy! What a wonderful conversation. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Michael. Bye bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.